There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio, Supernatural News Parashare Edition. Thank you so much for tuning in. And Tim, today, stay tuned because we are going to tell you how to beat the old hag.
And do what?
You heard me. We're going to beat the old hag. Tim, this is something that terrifies people around the world, the old hag syndrome. And well, science is finally speaking up about this supposed supernatural event. So a little bit later in today's program, we're going to tell you how to beat the old hag, Tim.
For a minute there, Dave, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I thought you were taking a shot at my mom there.
No, never. All right. Okay. Your mom's a wonderful, wonderful woman.
All right.
Hey, I want to do two movie reviews.
Sure.
It's been a while. And you know, it's funny. Cindy Keza and I are out on set filming a new TV series. Mm-hmm. And we were bored the other day after we got off filming, and she said, how about if we go to a movie? So we went to the movie theater. The only thing that was still available was Candyman.
Oh, I've been wanting to see it. Yeah.
Now, you know, here's something that we both all of a sudden realized as the movie began. The last movie that either one of us saw was in a movie theater 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it was a Jordan Peele movie.
Ah, okay.
That was the last movie. And I think it was Us. I think that's what they called. Yeah. I can't remember the full title of it, but I think it was Us. And literally the next day they closed the theater down and everything went into massive COVID shutdown.
Okay.
So the first movie I've seen in a theater again turns out to be a Jordan Peele movie. And who's my guest? Cindy Keza. So I guess it was a good bookend. Us was definitely an alarming, disarming, very bizarre psychological thriller horror movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was 2 years ago. So we revisit Candyman. Now, if you remember, I think it was in the late 80s, early 90s, the movie Candyman came out starring Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd in the main roles of the movie. And it was an interesting flick. I was never a big fan of it. I thought it was just okay. But I grew up in and around that area, not in Cabrini Green, but I mean I just miles from there. Right.
I didn't think you grew up in Cabrini Green, but
no, but yeah. It was not far from our home. And I remember when the movie came out, we went driving through Cabrini Green because we had always heard about it, but had never been there. So my buddies and I went through there and realized quickly, we don't belong here.
No,
it didn't. People were not real happy to see a car full of idiot white boys driving through their town. And I'm not saying that in any racist deal, but you could see that they could tell, oh, more idiots that saw Candyman, right?
Yep.
So that movie, like I said, never really moved me. So I went into this with absolutely no expectations because, you know, I couldn't tell if this was a reboot or a sequel. It turns out that it is a soft sequel, in itself a reboot, if you will. But Virginia Madsen's character is referenced and Tony Todd's character is referenced. And it becomes an interesting play on what took place. You know, Virginia Madsen wanted to find the story behind who Candyman really was. And she finds an iteration of Candyman. This story takes a little deeper. And certainly Jordan Peele and the people behind this movie are definitely, they're very well tapped into what's going on in our world and in our country. And the way that African Americans are treated by law enforcement and, you know, sometimes judged too quickly. So they definitely tap into that and show this horrific thread of violence to that community throughout this movie. So it's a very uncomfortable movie to watch, but it's all based in reality. And again, this isn't me attacking police in any way, shape, or form. People make mistakes in all businesses that cost lives. And again, I don't want, you know, all police to be lumped under racism or anything along those lines. Obviously, there are corruptions and problems across the nation, and that needs to be detailed. But they handle that in this movie and tie it to a horror theme. So it's a really interesting little twist. I still just didn't feel connected to the movie. I felt like I don't know how to put it. I can't define it exactly. I just didn't feel like the movie was hitting for me the way it should. It never truly felt scary. It just felt more tragic, if that makes sense. So in that sense, 1 out of 5 stars, I would give it a solid 3 stars.
Okay.
Because I just felt, like I said, they never really kind of got to what I would have hoped would have been the storyline. It's interesting, and there's some weird twists to it, but it, like I said, it just didn't fly for me.
With the originals, I kind of felt the same way. I had an affinity for them, but there was something that was missing a little bit there. I guess I had an affinity for Tony Todd because his aura is very scary. I mean, there's something about him that's just, he just portrays that downright sinister villain. But he's kind of the villain you want to root for, kind of like Freddy. In a weird kind of way, I guess. Right,
without the comical aspects of Freddy, right, which is what won you over. The first movie of Nightmare on Elm Street was just pure terror. Right. The rest became a comical foil.
Exactly. So I guess I've always had an affinity for those movies, and so I was really looking forward to seeing this one, and still looking forward to seeing it. I just life has kind of caught up with me a little bit here, so I haven't had a chance to get out and see much of anything at all. But that's definitely still one of the ones I'm going to get out to see because mm-hmm. I want to.
I'll tell you this: in the current state of the world, I don't know if it's worth going to see it in a movie theater. I think wait till it comes out at Redbox or on demand. To me, it wasn't a movie that needed to be seen on a big screen. I was just happy to get the hell out and see a movie in a theater again.
You know, I you bring up a good point, and some people may go, that's a little, and I'll put this in perspective. And if I can take like 20 seconds to put this in perspective, I will. I did a lot of TV watch, and I've been quite ill this weekend. So I did a lot of, I spent a lot of time in front of the TV. One of the things, if you want to bring this back around to police departments and fire departments, I did a lot of watching of the memorials of 9/11. I shed a few tears this weekend. As I'm watching television, I'm realizing I'm seeing these different trailers for movies, and I'm seeing more and more movies in theaters only. And I'm thinking, there's a one particular incident that got movie companies to start putting them back in theaters only. Unfortunately, it was the Black Widow lawsuit. And people may say, well, no, Tim, I don't think that's it. It is it. Because there's only one company that's still doing both. Release on demand or not on demand, but it's HBO Max. They're putting it on HBO Max and then in theaters. Thank God, because I do want to see the Many Saints of Newark. But as someone who's extremely immunocompromised, I got to pick and choose what I want to see. Now, if I'm going to take my chances, and this is only me, it doesn't speak to anybody out there but me. This is just me. I wear a mask everywhere because I can't afford to get sick. Sick to me may equal the end to me. So I wear my mask. That's just how it is. So what do I want to take a chance to go see? So I'm sitting there this weekend and I go, you know what? I'm looking at this new Bond film, and how long have we been waiting for this Bond film?
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, 2 years now.
Yeah. So they're finally setting their foot down October 1st.
October 8th, I think, is the new date.
Is it?
They keep,
is it?
Yeah,
now?
They keep pushing. I just saw the trailer for it again in the theater when I went to go see the two movies I saw. Yeah.
So then they changed it in the theater from what they're showing on TV.
Well, who knows? It might have changed again. Maybe they just don't have an updated trailer. I don't know. I saw October 8th was the current release date, but that's neither here nor there. Go ahead.
Okay. So regardless, October. So we've been waiting 2 years for this movie. Enough so that if you really wanted to find out what was going on in this movie, you probably could have gone to the internet and found out. But this movie would probably be the one I'd take my chances on. With that being said, there's not a lot out there. I think I would go, you know what? I'm gonna, including Marvel movies, because Shang-Chi came out and I really wanted to see that.
Well, I did, and I wanted to tell you about that too.
Oh, that's a great lead-in. But that's one I really wanted to see too. Yeah. And I just couldn't bring myself to go.
Well, again, I don't believe Candyman needs. You don't have to see it in the theater, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the movie companies. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie, and it's one of those I think that it can be as compelling and eerie watching it at home in the safety of your own home as it is out in the theaters. When you go to a movie, I want it to be a big spectacle. I want to see something,
right?
You know, big on screen. Like you said, James Bond, that's going to be one I would definitely like to see. Now, I will tell you, I'm in a different place than you are. In the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the surrounding suburbs, people are going back en masse to theaters.
Yeah.
The little town that I'm located in, and I can't give any specific information, there is one little theater. They've got like four or five, one cinema, and they've got four or five little theaters inside. Very little. Their big theater was reserved for Shang-Chi, the Legend of the Ten Rings, and it was still one of the smaller, you know, side theaters that we would normally see in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay.
But when Cindy and I went to go see Candyman, there were four of us in the theater. I felt like, you know, this maybe this is the town I can go see movies on the big screen again, because if I wait a little bit and Shang-Chi has been out for a while, I was one of eight people in the theater on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
For Shang-Chi, which is the newest in the Marvel Universe movies. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say this, the one thing I'll give Marvel credit for, each movie, although superhero movies, has a different feel to it, right? You've got some of the Captain America movies, which were, you know, kind of spy thrillers and World War II movies. And, you know, they had a different vibe. It was obviously a superhero movie, but it had different feel to it. You know, Ant-Man was a caper movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Thor was a fantasy movie. You had, you know, Iron Man, of course, kind of setting the way. So there were superhero aspects to that. Shang-Chi, again, was a character I never really read, which I give Marvel credit for as well, because they base this entire universe around, to me, some of the least important characters. Thor, Iron Man, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. Those were some of the most inconsequential characters for me growing up. You know, they just never resonated with me, but the movies are astounding. Mm-hmm. So I remember Shang-Chi or Shanghai, as I used to think it was when I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
Shang-Chi was another one of those characters where, you know, I'd only read about him in Marvel team-ups with Spider-Man.
Right.
So I had, again, no expectations. Holy shit, was this movie great. It is a beautiful spectacle. It has amazing fantasy feel to it. It's got kung fu, you know, feel to it. It's got like those old martial art movie feel. People want to put it like a Mortal Kombat. Not really. Not in that sense. This is a quest movie. It's beautifully done. You never really feel it's a superhero movie per se, until right near the end, of course. But it's interesting dynamics of even the villain is relatable, which I love. Okay. I thought it was really a well-done movie. Probably one of the better superhero movies I've seen in a while. And that says a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how they tie this in to the next phase for Marvel. I would, out of 5 stars, I'm going to seriously give this about 4.5 stars. Wow. Because, but again, you have to like martial arts movies, and you know, it's got fantasy, it's got martial arts, it's well acted, well choreographed, and it's so beautifully done. The cinematography and the CGI and work is just beautiful. So I really enjoyed the movie for that in itself. But for those of you, what has it got to do with the supernatural or paranormal, Dave? Plenty, because when they finally kind of get to their destination, it's filled with all of these mystical creatures that you've read about. And the way that they have created these creatures, it almost feels like they could exist. And It is so amazing. I don't know. It's another one of those. Kudos to you, Marvel. And listen, they're also taking chances. They're bringing to the mainstream characters from other cultures, and they're doing them honor and justice. You know, obviously with the kickoff of Black Panther and now with Shang-Chi, it's giving a bigger, wider dynamic that I love. And that's why I don't think we necessarily have to change the other superheroes to different ethnicities and different backgrounds and sexualities to make them important. I think you can take what already exists and just make them shine, because there are a lot of great characters that already existed in the Marvel universe, and with the flair that they're putting behind them, that could be what you're dealing with. I you know what I'm saying? I just think that there's enough on the plate that they could just really create their own cinematic worlds with these characters that already exist. So well done.
Not only that, but the one thing I think Marvel got right that DC has gotten wrong up until maybe the last few movies is the fact that you have people that have graduated from the comics, writers that have graduated from the comics, gone to the movie side of things and really understand the history of Marvel. The Black Panther movie was written off of a storyline that appeared in the Black Panther comic books that was written by Christopher Priest. So you've got a storyline that already existed that was kind of, you know, tapped and screwed and, you know, punched up a little bit for the movie and was made relatable to an entire audience and an entire different audience.
Right.
And that's the beautiful thing about what Marvel is doing now. Shang-Chi, let's face it, was a C-level character in Marvel.
Right.
Couldn't maintain a regular series book. It was a 70s fad. Went away in the 80s, came back a little bit in the 90s, went away again in the 2000s, and they've just relaunched the book for the movie. The book really has done nothing. It kind of came and gone as the fad of not even with the fad of Kung Fu, because when Wu-Tang Clan came along, Shang-Chi never came back along. It's never right. really done anything as far as sales.
Well, this may have revitalized it. And I think if they follow that case again, don't go into this expecting your standard superhero movie fare. You're not going to find that. But if you go into it looking for an amazing fantasy, martial arts movie, fast moving, it'll hit those vibes for you. And even if you're not a martial arts fan, the choreography is so beautiful in this movie. And the storyline is so well told. And for once, I honestly feel like there's a villain that you can almost stand behind, because you see the redemptive qualities of him throughout the movie. So there is some of that to me that I really enjoyed. And it shows you, I don't know, it just gave a great perspective on what is a hero and what is a villain and what separates them. And sometimes it's an insanely thin line.
I love those stories.
Yeah.
The Professor Xavier Magneto stories, the mirror images of each other that only a thin line separates. Those are the best type of stories that I enjoy.
Well, speaking of just a thin line that separates, that leads us into our first news story, Tim, and it's a feel-good story. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Catholic bishop resigns after falling in love with a satanic erotica author.
Aww.
It shows that true love prevails, Tim, even in the case of satanic erotica. A Spanish bishop and exorcist has stepped down to start a new life after falling in love with a divorced author of satanic-themed eroticas. Xavier Novell, 52, announced last month that he was resigning from his post of Bishop of Solsona in Catalonia for strictly personal reasons. On Monday, it was revealed by Religion Digital, a news site, that Novell had fallen for Sylvia Cabal, a divorced mother of two. Novell reportedly said he had fallen in love and wanted to do the right thing. Cabal, 38, is a writer of erotic novels featuring characters possessed by the demon of lust, a fact which has raised eyebrows among Novell's former colleagues. However, Novell is likely no stranger to the demonic, having been among the handful of Spanish bishops to decline having an exorcist appointed in 2015, opting instead to perform the role himself. He reportedly met Cabal, a psychologist who has studied sexology, yoga, Catholicism, and Islam, after she began studying demonology. Her books are described by the publisher as turning all our moral and ethical considerations upside down and on their ears. The Hell in Gabriel's Lust, Cabal's most recent book, promises prisons, psychopathy, sects, sadism, madness, lust, and little by little, as the story progresses, the unreality of immorality and the crude struggle between good and evil, between God and Satan, and between angels and demons. Novell had been seen as a star on the rise within Spain's Catholic Church after being appointed as the country's youngest bishop back in 2010 when he was only 41. However, this ascent stalled, the Times reported, with the election of Pope Francis in 2013. Francis has edged the Vatican towards more liberal stances than those espoused by his traditionalist predecessor, Pope Benedict. So Novell, who has defended gay conversion therapy and described abortion and euthanasia as genocide, is out of step with the mood of the church under Pope Francis. His resignation was accepted by the Pope, and the church has not commented. Novell also set himself apart as the only bishop to openly vote in the 2017 controversial Catalan independence referendum, illegal under Spanish law. So I just thought that was an interesting deal. And that was the story this week that was sent to me by listeners from all around the world. I think everybody just loves the fact that a Catholic bishop stepped down to marry a erotica author of satanic books.
It's different, that's for sure.
Love, you can't define it, man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep up with the feel-good stories, Tim, because this, Dave, what does this next story have to do with the supernatural or paranormal? Oh, we'll talk about that. Here's the headline. Dolphins alert a rescue crew to save a lost swimmer who was stranded at sea for 12 hours. Dolphins, of course, are incredibly intelligent creatures. And amazingly, they're also famously compassionate toward humans. There are countless stories of dolphins lending people a flipper to in dangerous situations, from warning off great white sharks to saving kids from drowning. One most recent example comes from Ireland, where a pod of dolphins helped rescue a stranded swimmer in the sea near Castle Gregory in County Kerry. The swimmer, an unnamed man in his 30s from County Down, was missing almost 12 hours before he was spotted by Royal National Lifeboat Institution lifeboat volunteers on August 22nd. The team underwent an extensive search after his clothes had been discovered on Castle Gregory Beach earlier in the day. After a full day of searching at around 8:30 p.m., a lifeboat crew spotted a pod of dolphins surrounding the swimmer about 2.5 miles off the coast. The man was conscious but was hypothermic and exhausted. He was immediately brought to the hospital, where he is now recovering. The man told rescuers he had intended to swim out to the Muglamore Rock, 5 miles out from where he set off at Castle Gregory Beach. However, he became stranded, freezing, wearing only a pair of swimming trunks. The animals surrounded him were later identified by conservationists as a population of bottlenose dolphins living in Scotland's Moray Firth. The group has been spotted in the area since 2019, and that's lucky for the swimmer. They were around when he needed them. Due to the large size of the pod, they helped draw attention to the lost swimmer. RNLI Coxswain, that's the name, Tim, Finbar O'Connell says, there were a lot of dolphins around where the man was finally located. He added, maybe they helped him in some way or another. Who knows? Or were they just waiting for a meal to finally stop moving, Tim? Were dolphins given too much credit in this story? Makes you think. No, I think they were definitely saving him. People have been talking for years about the fact of the compassion and intelligence behind these creatures. But I don't know if a lot of our listeners realized him. There's also a belief that they are direct descendants of gray aliens.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We know that dolphins once walked the earth. They were land-dwelling creatures. As a matter of fact, in their fins, their side fins, there are phalanges. There are finger bones. So we know that these creatures were once land dwellers. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. So, you know, were the grays, were these alien-like creatures there to save this person? But, Tim, I have a second story to follow up on that. One that may blow your mind because it certainly blew my mind.
All right.
Now, when you look at a dolphin, it's not too far-fetched to look at it and say, I could see how this could be an adapted gray alien, right?
Mm-hmm.
Slit for the mouth, large black eyes, that gray rubbery-like skin that so many people talk about when they talk about encountering the grays. Well, science has weighed in, Tim, and you know, we've heard that jellyfish seem to have a very alien-like construct, right?
Right.
Things that seem to confound science for what's needed here on Earth. But there's another creature now. Penguins might be aliens. That's according to scientists after discovering Venus chemical in bird poop, Tim.
Ah.
How about that? Huh?
Bird poop.
After the study, the scientists now believe penguins could help them identify different types of organisms that exist in other worlds. Their distinctive waddle and black and white coats make them one of the most adorable creatures in the world, and you can look at them moving in packs for hours and wonder what they're up to. But something about them might be otherworldly. At least that's what scientists are saying. It's speculated that penguins could be aliens after scientists found traces of a chemical in their droppings that's also found in the planet Venus. Now, the researchers from the UK were able to find traces of the chemical known as phosphine in the bird's poo. It has raised widespread speculations and questions about the origins of penguins because scientists are now struggling to explain how phosphine exists on Earth, 38 million miles away from Venus. After the study, the scientists now believe penguins could help identify different types of organisms that exist on other worlds. To know more about the chemical traces, the scientists are now planning to study the lifestyle of Gentoo penguins, which are common in the Falkland Islands. We're convinced that the phosphine finding is real, but we don't know what's making it. There are some anaerobic bacteria that produce phosphine. It's found in pond slime and the guts of badgers and penguin guano, Dr. Dave Clements of Imperial College London told Daily Star. It may have to do with defense or signaling against competing bacteria. In 2020, traces of the chemical were found in layers of gas surrounding Venus, which has a similar atmosphere to Earth, according to reports. The research on penguins and phosphine is being done ahead of the launch of the James Webb Space Telescope. It will be unveiled from French Guiana on December 18th, according to NASA. It will also be able to detect life on other planets. The telescope will study deep space and serve as NASA's main observatory for the coming years. So penguins are possibly aliens. Now, that's what the headlines scream. But I have to question, if they're finding it in the poop, couldn't it just be something that lives in the oceans that the penguins are eating that could be from Venus?
Or a type of bacteria that's in the intestinal tract, too, because they said something about beavers and something else. So,
right.
Yeah.
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 Well, Tim, here's a story for you and me. If we're looking for a little love in all the wrong places, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
We may have just found it. It seems that sea snakes have been attacking humans, but for all the wrong reasons, according to science.
Okay.
All right. Perhaps few things would induce panic more than getting approached by a highly venomous serpent while underwater. However, Australian scientists urge divers not to be alarmed. Sea snakes, one of the most venomous serpents on the world, Tim, have been approaching humans. But the sea snakes apparently mean us no ill will and are probably just trying to mate with us, Tim. Yeah, according to a slithery study by researchers at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, sea snake attacks on humans apparently result from mistaken identity during sexual interactions. The frisky findings, published Thursday in the Scientific Reports Journal, are based on insights accumulated by researcher Tim Lynch during his 158 encounters with the highly toxic olive sea snakes while diving in the Great Barrier Reef. While Lynch conducted the underwater fact-finding missions in the late 1990s, he didn't get the chance to publish his discoveries until the coronavirus pandemic hit last year. You can blame COVID for this, said Richard Schein, a professor of biology, who helped turn Lynch's salacious serpent thesis into a bona fide science paper. The resulting dissertation, dubbed the first quantitative evidence of sea snake attacks, the first quantitative evidence of sea snake attacks argues that incidents of unprovoked aggression on humans were actually just misdirected courtship responses, as almost always occurred during the winter breeding season from May to August. They also disproportionately involved male snakes who, during these encounters, would exhibit courtship behaviors, such as coiling around a diver's arm. Or, as Schein told the New York Times, it's just a lovesick boy looking for a girlfriend and making a rather foolish mistake, haven't we all? The study authors wrote that the agitated, rapid approaches by males, easily interpreted as attacks, often occurred after a courting male lost contact with a female he was pursuing. So I guess it's the old statement, Tim, if you can't love the one you want, love the arm you're with. After interactions between rival males or when a diver tried to flee from a male, they added that the later instance may inadvertently mimic the responses of female snakes to courtships, encouraging males to give chase. Come on, sea snakes. We know by now no means no. That doesn't mean chase them down and wear them out. Come on. Those patterns seem to indicate that the randy reptiles were mistaking divers for either a potential mate or a rival male. Otherwise, why would free-ranging snakes approach and bite a person that has not harassed it, is too large to be a prey item, and could readily be evaded in the complex three-dimensional world of a coral reef? The researchers ask, noting that the slitherers would prefer to flee than confront a much larger human.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just combining words to, you know, try to shorten the story. They would, you know, noting that slitherers would prefer to flee rather than confront a much larger human. The idea of a sea snake mistaking a diver for a scaly soulmate still might sound ridiculous. However, the paper argues that sea snakes' eyesight is poor and that their land-dwelling brethren, which would explain, you know, unlike their land dwelling brethren, which would explain the rare instances of female snakes approaching divers, they were frequently trying to escape their potential male suitors and had mistaken a human for a coral formation that they could hide behind. In order to avoid attacks by spurned male snakes, the researchers encouraged divers to keep still and avoid retaliation. The best strategy for divers in such situations may be to allow the snake to investigate them, and in particular, to allow the snake to investigate chemical cues with its tongue. The team wrote in the study, attempting to flee is likely to be futile and may even increase the pursuit of these horny sons of bitches, and attempting to drive the animal away may induce retaliation. In other words, don't play hard to get, Tim. So next time, Tim, you find yourself snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef and a male sea snake attacks you, just go with it, Tim. Just give in. Let it have its way with your arm, and then it'll swim away happy.
Really?
That's all I'm asking.
I think I have actual audio of the snake coming after you, Dave. It's...
I'm a snake. I'm a snake. I'm a snake. I'm a slithery little snakey snake.
So...
I could understand how a male sea snake could see that and think, oh yeah, tonight I'm getting some loving.
Yeah, yeah.
Luring.
Yeah, I don't understand the confusion, to be honest with you.
Maybe these are young snakes. We all have those moments of confusion growing up. I mean, you remember college.
I do, but there was alcohol involved, Dave. Where's the alcohol involved with these snakes? That's what I want to know.
you don't know. Maybe they're just meeting down at the coral reef, having a couple of cocktails, you know, and then go out looking for love. That's what could be going on. Well, let's go from sea snakes to balls, Tim. How about that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. There's an eerie video that's been showing up right now, Tim, about a dog who is playing with a ball, and a ghost apparently boots the ball away from the dog. Now, we've got this video up on our website. You can go to darknessradio.com, click on the news tab where you're going to find all of today's news, and you'll see this story for yourself so you can see the video and judge for yourself. Now, it's interesting. I've seen the video. I've watched it numerous times. I can't make sense of it. I would have to see the ball. Be the ball, Tim, in yeah. order to maybe understand exactly what's going on. But there are billions of dog lovers in the world. Even some cat people can't help but admit the canines, they're pretty cute. It seems that the love for pooches might actually extend, though, into the afterlife, as a new video shows. A clip comes from an owner of two French bulldogs who want to play with a piece or want to play. Good God, this is poorly written. The video has many people believing that a poltergeist was responsible for the ball's strange movement. And again, maybe it's just a ghost that wanted to play with the puppies as well. But you see the owner of these two dogs throws a black ball, and the dog is going out to play fetch. And as the ball goes rolling out and seems to come to a stop, all of a sudden it jerks to the right and takes off again. So I don't know if it's one of those balls that has like a weighted thing in it that'll make it zigzag around. But this takes off pretty quick, as though it had been kicked or booted from an unseen force. Is it a ghost? Is it supernatural activity? Is it a play ball that's meant to do something strange like this? I don't know. I don't have any answers. But thankfully, I do have the video. So it's up on our site. You guys can go take a look at it and judge for yourself what exactly is going on. Now, this is my, oh, come on now, story of the week.
Okay.
I know it's hard to believe it comes from the Sun magazine, Tim.
Okay.
A chilling face has been spotted lurking in a car after a garage worker shared images online of a car so dirty that he refused to carry out its MOT. MOT tester Sam Burrows shared the stomach-churning pictures, with people being left creeped out by the human face spotted among the mess. The red motor was brought in with dirty clothes, empty cans and junk food wrappers, and packets of tobacco spread throughout the car. Documenting the disgust on an online MOT tester forum on Facebook, Sam said, "Happy frickin' Monday," point blank refusing to test the car. The customer just laughed and walked off like I was joking. "One MOT fee is not worth me catching whatever is flecking lurking in this thing." And this car is disgusting, Tim.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had that day where we've got, you know, a couple food wrappers in the front seat or back seat, right? This car is, it's like a hoarder's paradise inside this car. It is so gross. But they're pointing out this eerie face staring out from underneath a pile of, it looks like newspapers and things in the back seat. "One MOT fee is not worth me catching whatever is flecking lurking in this thing," he says. Workers on the forum backed up his refusal to inspect the rancid car, but the mess wasn't the only thing that was chilling. One eagle-eye person spotted what looks to be a human face buried beneath bags of junk on the back seat. He said, "I think there may be a person in the back seat. Look slightly to the left from the top of the driver's seat. There is a very pale face poking out." Referencing a sci-fi movie directed by Ridley Scott as a prequel to Alien, he said, "It looks like the face of the alien in Prometheus." He added, "I reckon we could make a DVSA-approved reason to refuse version of Where's Wally with these pics. There's enough of them to make a hard back." I don't know what all of that European slang means, Tim, but another user agreed with Sam's decision to refuse to check the vehicle over due to its horrific condition, saying, "Refuse to test this thing." An MOT, which stands for Ministry of Transport, is a means of testing a vehicle's safety exhaust emissions and road readiness introduced by the government department back in 1960. Now, I'm looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it looks like a painted portrait of somebody from the 1800s. That kind of face, but it's so obvious that it's not a face that I can't believe people and that the news thought this story worthy enough to share. But then why are you sharing it, Dave? Because I can't believe other people are sharing it thinking it's a ghost. Don't question me. I'm the host of the show. That's why I share it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing. That's all I got to say. Hey, folks, let me remind you, The Curse of Lizzie Borden is now on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. We are getting great response to this. It has been trending on the Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK apps. Go check out The Curse of Lizzie Borden, the new paranormal shock doc. I'm in it as lead investigator. Chris Fleming, the medium, is with me. Sam Beltrusis, an actual relative of the Borden family, and Luann Jolly, another investigator who had some really great EVP. We're all in on this case investigating it. I'm pretty proud of a lot of the things that we were able to accomplish in this series. And I had one of the most unnerving, uncomfortable paranormal situations ever occur to me. Everybody wants to know if I'm okay afterwards. I am. They don't show it, but Chris really talked me down afterwards, walked me through it, helped do a clearing ritual with me, and I feel much better. I didn't have any long-term effects. The only long-term effects were how bad my shoulder, elbow, and wrist hurt for about 3 days afterwards. It was kind of a forced channeling automatic writing. Upon reflection, I will tell you, I do regret the way I handled it. I wish I would have gone with it. I wish I would have just let happen what was going on instead of fearing it, because I wonder how much easier and how much better we would have gotten communication. But I'll tell you what, you know, it's real easy. I've seen people go, oh, I would have just gone with it. Until you're in the moment when you no longer have control of one of your own appendages, it's real easy to say what you would have done in that situation. This did not feel normal to me. It was one of the most, like I said, alarming and disarming, pun intended, moments. And I regret not giving over to it, but I also didn't know what this thing was. And we were trying to make communication with a dark entity. I didn't want to give permission for this thing to work on me or come in through me. So, you know, that's part of it. You'll see it in the episode. And we're going to be actually talking about that tomorrow on the show, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. I'll be going into a deep dive on this. And we'll talk about some of the cool stuff that didn't get caught, or I shouldn't say didn't get caught, but didn't air in the special. There was so much stuff, and we only had 26 or 30 minutes to tell the story. We filmed there for a week and captured a lot of interesting things. And we'll talk about some of the issues with doing a show like this and how production has to overlook some aspects to tell different parts of the story. But it was really one of the most compelling investigations I've been a part of.
Very cool.
Thank you to everybody that watched it. Watch it again. Share it with friends, neighbors, relatives. Put it on your social media. Go share this, please. I'd love for this to blow up so we get more follow-up shock docs. But we'll be talking about that tomorrow on the show. We're also going to be it's still out there. It's on Discovery Plus. That's what I meant to say. So everybody's like, oh, I missed the airing. When will it air again? It's on Discovery Plus, the app, so you can watch it anytime. The other question is, will it be on Travel Channel? I don't know at this point. Maybe it'll come out in October during Ghosttober. Maybe they'll put it on Travel Channel. I don't know. But this is what I've been suggesting to people. If you've held off on getting Discovery Plus, how about this? Go take advantage of the 7-day free trial right now. Watch The Curse of Lizzie Borden. Binge watch the 2 seasons of The Holzer Files. And if you don't like having Discovery Plus, cancel it after that. If you do, and I think you will, then make sure that you maintain your subscription. It's $5 a month. You get commercials with that. $7 a month gets you commercial-free content. And it gets you all your favorite paranormal cooking shows, true crime programs, do-it-yourself programs, history programs. There's like 20 channels under this corporate umbrella, and there's tens of thousands of hours of programming. So there's a lot of bang for your buck. $5 a month or $7 a month for a commercial free. So that's something you can consider and check out for yourself. Here's a quick email. Dear Dave and Tim, I'm a long, long, long time listener. I was at work listening to your recent Supernatural News episode regarding waking up to loud noises and screams. I've had my own experiences waking up to sudden noises. I believe it's associated with my sleep apnea. At first, when I would occasionally stop breathing, my body would jump and gasp for breath and wake me with the feeling like I was jumping and falling from a cliff or out of a plane, which was quite startling. I wished I could wake up in some other manner. I was working in the daycare at the time and would wake up to one of the children calling my name. I thought it was burnout and that I was even hearing them call me in my sleep. I eventually realized it was related to my sleep patterns. Then prayed to my spirit guide or subconscious to choose another method. I then started waking up to the sound of a doorbell ringing. I even woke up my husband to say someone was at the door. No pranksters or black-eyed children were ever to be found, thank God. Then someone rang the doorbell during the day, and I realized that was not the same doorbell ring that was waking me up. I laughed because I realized that I had gotten my wish. I was being woken up to the breath with a simulated doorbell by my spirit guide or perhaps my own inner self. When I started mumbling, "That's not my doorbell," and falling back to sleep without changing position or better breathing, it changed into a whistling to wake me. Yes, I finally broke down and I started using a CPAP machine. Sleep well, my paranormal friends. And that comes from Patty. So that's a scientific look at what could be happening with those situations, as we discussed, the that waking up alerted. And I've had experiences like that. Many of our listeners have heard a banging or a crashing sound, something quick, bang, loud noise that really is spooky. Sometimes your voices, we talked about this last week. So it's pretty compelling. So with that said, I want to take a quick break. When we come back though, I want to talk about dealing with the old hag syndrome. How can we beat that? Can we beat that? Stay tuned. We'll find out more when we return to the best in paranormal podcasting. I'm Dave, that's Tim, and this is Darkness Radio. Hello, welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave, that's Tim. This is Darkness Radio. You can hear us here 3 days a week. We've got True Crime Tuesday and every Wednesday, Supernatural News and Parashare. Every Thursday, we bring you a guest. And from time to time, we have bonus episodes that will appear and some live shows that you can check out on our YouTube channel. I don't know if you even knew we had a YouTube channel, but we do. Go check out Darkness Radio, two separate words. You'll see Scully, our skull with the microphone mascot. He will lead you to our page and you can go see all of the past programming that we've placed up there and more. So check it out for yourself. I promised going into the break, Tim, that we would address sleep paralysis, the old hag syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've got a really interesting article here that came out. And this is how it goes. Have you ever woken up from your sleep? Were aware of your surroundings, but the fact that you were awake, but still felt stuck within your own body. Perhaps you may have heard voices or sounds, or maybe even seen things that couldn't possibly be there. If this resonates with you, then we're here to tell you, no, you're not going crazy. Instead, you might be experiencing sleep paralysis. Sleep paralysis is a behavioral state in which a person is conscious, yet their muscles are still paralyzed. That's what sleep experts and psychiatrist Dr. Eric Novzinger, MD, has to say. This creates an uncomfortable state in which a person can't move, yet they are awake and aware of their inability to move their muscles. Sometimes a person may also experience hallucinations when enduring an episode of sleep paralysis. There's no doubt that the phenomena is terrifying. Now, people on Reddit describe their experiences as unnerving, terrifying, and very scary. Others believe that their experiences are connected to paranormal activity and claim seeing demons as part of their hallucinations. But what exactly causes these frightening encounters while we sleep? And are there any ways to rid ourselves of it? Well, to find out, this article and the authors of it tapped two doctors to learn more about sleep paralysis and what is the best way to deal with it. What causes sleep paralysis? According to New York City-based neuropsychologist Dr. Saneem Hafiz, MD, sleep paralysis caused by being in between a state of wakefulness and asleep. at the same time. Typically, paralysis of the muscles occurs during rapid eye movement, REM sleep, which Dr. Nofzinger explains is the period of sleep associated with dreaming. The paralysis is to protect someone from acting out their dreams during their sleep, allowing for them to stay in an undisturbed state of rest, he says. When you're experiencing sleep paralysis, however, this muscle immobility happens while one is still conscious. So think about it this way, Tim. You're in your dream. You're having a fist fight with Rocky Balboa.
Jeez. Okay.
This is what keeps you from beating the person in bed next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that your brain pumps out this kind of anesthesia to your body to keep you paralyzed and keep you safe so that what your mind is perceiving is real, your body is not acting out. Because the mind and the body don't know the difference between a real and a vividly imaginative experience.
True.
Okay. So this is a protective feature. It doesn't always work. That's why people sleepwalk and some people do lash out in their dreams. But when you're in that state and then you're awoken maybe by something that happens, cat knocks something over in the house, somebody rings a doorbell, something falls off your bed and you hear that thump, you wake up, your body and consciousness become alert quicker than your body is allowed to kind of come back from that paralysis state. Now, no one exactly knows what causes the disassociation while sleeping, but studies have shown that sleep paralysis is linked to a family history of sleep paralysis. Sleep deprivation, narcolepsy, excessive alcohol consumption, and/or increased stress, according to Dr. Hafiz. It also connected to mental health conditions such as anxiety, panic, and bipolar disorders. It's important to note that sleep paralysis is rarely linked to deep underlying psychiatric problems. That's what the good doctor assures us. The symptoms of sleep paralysis can vary per person, but the most common is the feeling of being awoken but not being able to move your body. Dr. Hafiz says, other symptoms one might experience are difficulty breathing or the sense of pressure on the chest or having sensations and hallucinations that cause fear. Usually, the hallucinations are temporary and caused by a neurological disturbance at the time they are occurring, she explains. These hallucinations can fall into three categories. The first is intruder hallucinations, where there is a perception of a dangerous presence in the room. The second is chest pressure hallucinations, which Dr. Hafiz says can cause someone to feel as if they're suffocating. These are often accompanied by intruder hallucinations. The third is, and I don't know how to say this, so I'm going to do my best, vestibular motor hallucinations, which involve out-of-body experiences or feelings of movement like flying. Overall, most people report that sleep paralysis is definitely not an enjoyable experience. While it is frightening, Dr. Hafiz explains that sleep paralysis does not pose any serious risk to a person's health. The best thing you can do to combat sleep paralysis is practice some good sleeping hygiene. That's according to Dr. Nofzinger. This will help minimize any potential factors contributing to sleep paralysis, like sleep deprivation, anxiety, or increased stress. So take a look at stressors that might be interfacing with your stable sleep at night, he says. Now, interfering, not interfacing. Some tips for getting rid of those stressors and getting a good night's rest are having a set routine for sleeping and waking up. Practicing a relaxed nighttime ritual, like taking a bath and making your bedroom as zen as possible, says Dr. Hafiz. Reduce your alcohol consumption and caffeine, especially in the hours leading up to bedtime. And eliminate all electronic devices 30 minutes before you wish to go to sleep. If you're having a chronic issue with sleep paralysis, both experts agree, it's best to seek professional help. Dr. Hafiz recommends seeking therapy, and Dr. Nofzinger says a sleep medicine doctor could also be of great help. A sleep medicine doctor could reveal if there are any underlying conditions, such as narcolepsy, that could be leading to these episodes. Ultimately, you can rest assured that even though sleep paralysis isn't fun, it isn't something that's permanent. So, try some of those tips or reach out to a professional to ensure that you're getting a full and good night's rest. So there you have it, folks. We've said that for a long time. The sleep paralysis deal, I don't believe to be supernatural. That doesn't mean that in those waking and, you know, coming in and going out of sleep moments, we aren't tapped into the supernatural world a little more than we normally would. But the fact that sleep paralysis occurs is a neurological and a sleep disorder. And if it happens often, do seek help from a professional, just so you can check that out.
Right on.
All right. Timmy.
Yep.
I know you've invested in so many properties since we started this show that I've told you are up for sale. I have another one for you to look at.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right. A haunted Troy home comes with 9 ghosts, Tim.
Hmm.
Woohoo! 9 ghosts, as well as memories of notorious gangster and bootlegger John T. Legs Diamond supping in the dining room. So you can set the 2-story home at 562 Fifth Avenue apart from its neighbors in the city's Lannisburg neighborhood, across the avenue from Lannisburg Fire Station, and up the street from the iconic Snowman ice cream stand. The Enslin Mansion wouldn't strike one as a center for paranormal activity, but property owner Michelle Bell can detail the lights, sounds, and feelings that emanate throughout the residence that's been in her family now for 6 generations. It has a lot of spirits. It's very haunted, said Bell, 55, of Westchester County, who describes herself as an intuitive alchemist and an empath. Teams of paranormal investigators have gone through the house finding traces of ghosts haunting the building. Bell keeps the basement and other locations locked as they've been the scene of spiritual activity. Bell has gained international attention as a haunted house listed as an Airbnb rental for the adventurous willing to risk a ghostly encounter in one of its haunted bedrooms. Don't worry, our ghosts are harmless. You probably won't see them, although some visitors swear they exist. Reads her Airbnb listing of a queen bedroom for rent in the house, which, joined with the other use of the house common areas, currently rents for just $206 a night. But now, Tim, the whole house can be yours. Bell has listed the house at just $444,444, a spiritual number that she said she doesn't plan to change.
Oh.
So she connects it to a spiritual number, Tim.
I see.
Yeah, it's spiritual. In addition to being an author, film producer, and what she calls a death doula, in which she helps people move from this life to the next, Bell also sells real estate. The house has been filmed and featured in shows on Discover ID and TLC, the Learning Channel. I would like it to go to a young couple, said Bell, envisioning them as perhaps opening a bistro, but always appreciating its history and spiritual side. Bell has decided to part with the house after nursing her mother, who had Alzheimer's for 9 years in the residence. The family ties are strong, and they have that tinge of interesting history that evokes the Roaring Twenties and leaves one wondering what was said at the dining room table just off that kitchen. Bell's great-grandfather, Frederick A. Fail, bought the building in 1919 after immigrating from Bavaria. Fail hosted Diamond and other people in the supper club in the house when the gangsters were in town. My great-great-grandfather had connections, Bell said. The ties weren't necessarily notorious, as Fail was a man who knew people, she said. Diamond would be acquitted during a kidnapping trial in December of 31 at the Rensselaer County Courthouse and then killed the next day in an Albany boarding house. But it's the ghosts that draw attention. 5 are members of her own family who have strong ties to the house and to her, including her late son, Nick Bell. Then there's Shirley, who boarded at the house and was found dead at the foot of the basement stairs. And finally, 3 men who just cannot be explained. The Enslin Mansion, named for part of Bell's ancestral family, also still retains many of the features dating from its construction in 1890. For example, there's a tin ceiling in the front parlor, still intact, and ethereal feelings of a presence and random sounds are also included. So, Tim, just $444,444 is all it takes for you to own a haunted home.
Does that come with a 100-year mortgage?
Yeah, I'm sure we can arrange something like that. I will say this, though, and this is no judgment on Mrs. Bell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could you leave a home that you believe was still haunted by your own family, especially your son? If you believe that your son was still there, I would just be afraid that if I left, would his soul stay there? Or could it travel with me? Because I know we talk about the fact that, you know, we don't really know. Are ghosts landlocked? Are they time locked? What's going on? But I would just, that would be the tough part for me, is leaving a home where my family might still be.
I think for $444,444, she's fine either way, Dave.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But here, Tim, yeah. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you get a little down payment. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
I mean, this is something you have to commit to, though, Tim.
All right.
Because there's a company that's willing to pay you $1,300 to watch 13 horror movies during the month of October.
Oh, all right.
That's right. A finance company will pay an individual $1,300 to watch 13 scary movies in October in an effort to find out whether the size of a movie's budget impacts its effectiveness. Finance Buzz is looking to hire someone to be a horror movie heart rate analyst. The person will watch 13 of the scariest movies ever made while monitoring their heart rate using Fitbit, the company said in a news release. In honor of the upcoming spooky season, Finance Buzz are dying to know whether or not high-budget horror movies deliver strong scares rather than low-budget ones. The release said, "You'll help us discover whether or not a movie's budget impacts just how dread-inducing it can be by wearing a Fitbit to monitor your heart rate while you work your way through the list of 13 movies. The chosen participant is required to watch the following films between October 9th and October 18th. Saw, Amityville Horror, A Quiet Place, A Quiet Place 2, Candyman, Insidious, The Blair Witch Project, Sinister, Get Out, The Purge, Halloween from 2018, Paranormal Activity, and Annabelle." I'm just going to say it out loud, Tim. I think that this might be also a marketing campaign for Blumhouse Movies. I could be wrong.
You think so?
Maybe. Finance Buzz will provide the new analyst, probably the best way to say that word, Tim, with a Fitbit tracker along with $1,300 and a $50 gift card to cover the rental costs for the Fright Fest. To apply, you just have to fill out a form and tell the company why you're the best person for the job. Applications are due by September 26th, and Finance Buzz will pick a winner by October 1st. Where can we find that, Tim? Boy, if there was only a place people could go to easily find this article and how to fill out that form.
No, I think maybe darknessradio.com would work, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. Go to the news segment and just scroll down till you find the story, and you'll be able to check it out for yourself. And there you can go check it out. $1,300 to watch 13 horror movies.
It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a bargain, Tim. Heck of a bargain.
Can I detour you for a second?
What? Sure.
Speaking of scary stuff, have you been keeping up on The Walking Dead?
I have. I've been watching The Walking Dead new season. I've just caught up completely in we're on like our fourth or fifth episode now. Yeah.
Yep. Without spoiling anything, what do you think so far?
I think it's okay. I'm going to give them a little leeway because I think they're setting something up. I hope that starts snowballing and getting bigger, but I would have hoped for something a little better in the first four or five episodes. Obviously, they've introduced a new group of villains and everything. But it's okay. It hasn't been great. It's been okay. It's still entertaining. But I want that kind of next level for the last season.
You know, what's interesting is I understand that they've put Angela Kang in a bad place. When you say there's one season left, but it's an extended season, but you've got two storylines to fit into it, because really the Commonwealth and the Reapers are two storylines crammed into one. And you've got to be creative with it. And I think she's done an extremely good job at putting them both together.
Well, see, what they've done here is a marketing ploy, in my opinion. They're calling this an extended season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like double what they would normally do per season. So I think what they're saying is, listen, there were a lot of people on the fence that were kind of dropping off. Well, there's only one season left. I'll commit to that. If I said there's two seasons, we know there's two seasons left. You still might have that drop off. But if I say there's only one extended season, well, I'll hang in for that just to see how it ends.
Yeah. Yeah. I get you there. There's so much left to throw in there. And I don't know if you read the end of the Walking Dead comic.
Yes, I did.
It was so abrupt. It was just so we're stopping it right here. That it was almost kind of, you wonder how this is going to come to an end, because you know that there, if you read the internet stuff, you know that there are some spinoffs coming. So I find this all very interesting. I think the show has actually gotten much better under Angela Kang. I think it's really a I'm finding it kind of thrilling, scary, and intriguing all at the same time, including, and again, I said I wouldn't say anything about spoilers, but last night's episode was intense. And I think that's some of the stuff that that they lost for a lot of years under Scott M. Gimple. So
I would agree. Like you said, I'm not putting down the season so far. I see where they're going. And actually, the ads for next week's episode look like it might be one of the best for this, you know, first new batch. So I understand we've got to introduce a lot of things. I will say, for those of you that have been out to Mansfield, a reformatory, OSR, the new villain this season is a gentleman by the name of Pope.
Yep.
And I had to laugh. I actually took a screen cap of Pope and I sent it to Ron Puff. Do you remember Ron?
Yeah.
The guy that, yeah. Holy crap. I said, Ron, this guy stole your image. As a matter of fact, there's a scene of him standing there in what looks like Mansfield Reformatory. And Ron started laughing. He goes, yeah, I could definitely see the likeness. It's pretty funny.
I was sitting there last night trying to think of who Pope looked like. And I thought, you know, if he was still alive, maybe Robin Williams. If you took
to a degree.
I mean, I can see that. If he had aged, you know, and maybe built himself up a little bit, you know, and, you know, as far as some weightlifting. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, no, he looks like somebody we know. And I just couldn't put my finger on it. And you just nailed it. Yeah.
Ron T. Puff out at OSR, Mansfield Reformatory. Next time you're out there, take a good look at him if you're a Walking Dead fan. Hey, Tim and Dave. What the shit?
Hey, hi.
I have another paranormal 911 story. If you recall, I sent a story about a 911 call involving a clown man in the past. Anyway, this story is from an officer friend of mine. We'll call him Joe. He recently retired and was an officer in the same town for almost 30 years. He was the kind of officer that the people in the neighborhoods knew and loved. Joe was what an officer should be. In a world where that's not always the case. On this particular night, Joe responded to a residential alarm outside of his normal coverage area. They were shorthanded that night, so he drove to the other side of town to back up the responding officer. When they got on scene, the elderly resident was sitting on the porch. They got out, said hello, and asked if she knew her alarm system had gone off. She replied, "Yep, but I ain't seen nothing." They asked her if she wanted them to clear the house to make sure. The old lady chuckled and said, "Yeah, sure, but you won't find nothing either." Joe was a little puzzled by her answer, but proceeded to go through the house with the officer. It was a small two-story house, and when you walked in the front door, you were immediately looking at the stairs, which had a landing halfway up before turning. To the right of the doorway was the living room. It was a typical old lady living room with quilts and blankets on the chairs and a coffee table with little knickknacks, figurines, and a bowl of hard candy that no one ever buys, but old people always seem to have. Seriously, where do they get that stuff? Anyway, Joe and the other officer went through the house and didn't find anyone. All the windows and doors seemed secure and nothing seemed out of place. They walked back out on the porch and told the old lady that everything seemed okay. She said, "Yeah, I knew you wouldn't find nothing." At that moment, Joe heard a noise from inside. He was confused because they had just cleared the house. No one should be in there. And he hadn't seen evidence of any pets. He looked back through the front door and couldn't believe his eyes. Sitting on the landing between the first and second floors was the coffee table from the living room. And even stranger, the figurines, knickknacks, and that bowl of candy were all in the exact same spot, as though the whole thing had been teleported in one piece. Joe was dumbfounded. He turned around and looked at the old lady and said, "Well, nothing to see here. You have a good night, ma'am." Together, they jumped in the patrol car and sped back to the other side of town. Thanks for reading. And that comes from Nighthawk. Thank you, Nighthawk. Now, Tim, I do have to apologize to listeners again.
Okay.
As you may hear in the background, there's vacuuming going on. I am at the mercy of the hotel that I'm staying in for the next 2.5 months as I film a brand new series for Travel Channel and Discovery Plus. So, folks, I've had people send me messages over the last 2 weeks telling me that they've heard strange EVP sounds in the background during our Supernatural News and Parashare segments and our guests. Yeah. I'm willing to believe it's probably somebody in the hall walking by, talking loudly or playing music or vacuuming. But yes, there's currently somebody. Thank God. Thank God for a clean hallway, Tim, vacuuming directly outside my door.
Well, you know,
it's as if they knew.
they say cleanliness is next to godliness, Dave. And if that's the case, you're standing in heaven right now.
I am.
Yeah.
It's nirvana. Smoky, sky-filled nirvana. I will say this. I can't tell you the specifics of where we're at, but it is affected by wildfires.
Okay.
And I came to this place expecting to see the beauty and grandeur, but I feel like I stepped into Silent Hill, the video game.
Ooh.
There is smoke, gray skies, a blood red sun in the sky because it's so covered by the smoke.
Yeah.
So I think I've been here 2 full weeks now. I've seen blue skies 3 days out of all of those days. Everything else is smoke covered and creepy. It is lending to the effect of how freaky the place we're at is.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrifying. Hey, speaking of freaky things, I got to tell you something. I totally mind farted this. Folks, as you know, every year I do a series of, we go out of the country and we go to events, go to different countries. In Scotland, we're going to be visiting in September of 2022. That already sold out. I had another company approach me. They had an Ireland trip. And the host that they had to part ways with. So they asked, would I be willing to fill in October of 2022? I posted it on, I think, just my Facebook page and maybe one of my Twitter. We sold out within 30 hours. Wow. We sold out the 30 spaces for that trip. So I didn't ever get a chance to talk about it on the radio show. So I asked the tour guide company. I said, listen, how about if we do this? How about if we offer a super secret second trip that'll be taking place in June of 2022 that will follow the same itinerary, but I won't post it on social media. I'm only going to make it available to the listeners of Darkness Radio. And she said, that sounds great. Do you think we could fill another trip? I said, we filled the first one in 30 hours, having only placed one posting for it. So if you're interested in attending a trip in June of 2022 to Ireland, then all you need to do is email me, dave@darknessradio.com, dave@darknessradio.com. This is, again, only by super secret invitation only. So if you're interested, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I will forward your email to the event coordinator. They will send you the links and get you all the information. We're just doing this, like I said, as a cool secondary gift for just the listeners of this radio show.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I thought that was kind of a neat way to do it.
Yeah.
So the trip is identical to the one that will be taking place in October. And truthfully, I think going in June will be great because the weather will be nice as well, and it'll be perfect. They originally wanted me to push it into November. I'm like, no. October, you're still getting nice weather. November could start getting pretty dodgy over in Ireland. So we're going to stick with June and October. October's completely sold out for Ireland. September sold out for Scotland, but I do have the June trip available. It will not be on our page because, again, this is a super secret cool trip, and I will send you the information. Just send me dave@darknessradio.com if you want to attend. It is open for only the first 30 people that want to sign up for the trip. It does not include your airfare. That is something separate, but it does include all your breakfasts and I think one big group dinner that we do. You're on your own for your other meals, but it is there are 3 ghost hunts of famous haunted castles and sites. There are unbelievable opportunities and great hotels we're going to be staying at throughout the entire trip. So if you're interested, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Speaking of the UK, Tim, and this, by the way, this is not Northern Ireland. So I will, for those listeners that get angry that I just refer to Ireland on the whole, this is for Ireland, not Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Okay. And we're thinking about maybe in 2 years going back and doing a Northern Ireland event because I've never done Northern Ireland.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah. But this is where we're at. Anyway, Kristen Stewart, Tim, of Twilight fame and the horrible Charlie's Angels reboot movie is playing Diana Spencer. You know, Princess Di?
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that. Yeah.
Well, she says that she felt spooky spiritual feelings while playing Diana. Kristen Stewart is already receiving rave reviews for her portrayal of Princess Diana in the Pablo Larraín directed Spencer. And the movie hasn't even come out yet. Set over the course of a single weekend near the holidays, the film reportedly shows the moment Diana and Charles' marriage came to an end. And in a new interview, Kristen Stewart says she felt the strong presence of Diana throughout filming, though she stops at describing them as completely paranormal encounters. Speaking to the LA Times, Stewart discussed how she prepared for the role and wanted to feel like her performance was organic, despite taking posture and dialect lessons to make sure she got the voice and vibe of the princess correct. Diana's such a live wire, Stewart told the paper. She continued, any picture or interview I've ever seen of her, there's an explosive ground-shaking quality to her that I always feel like you never really know what's going to happen next, even when she's walking the red carpet. It just feels a bit scary. That could be projection because we all know what happened, but she's just this feral cat feel to her. So I wanted to convey that there's no way to plan chaos. You just have to fall into it. Also, and this might be a spoiler for anyone who wants to go into the movie super fresh, so skip this next segment if you do, there are some paranormal themes that play out in the movie. In particular, the interviewer discusses scenes in which Stewart's Diana has conversations with the ghost of Anne Boleyn, the famously doomed second wife of Henry VIII. Asked whether she noticed any paranormal goings on during the filming, Stewart laughs and says she didn't, but she adds, I did feel some spooky spiritual feelings making this movie. Even if I was just fantasizing, I felt like there were moments where I kind of got the sign off. So she says there was no paranormal experiences, but then in the next breath talks about how it's spooky and she felt that there was something there with her.
Hmm.
Stewart then discussed towing the line between wanting to channel the character and also not wanting to feel like she was crossing a line. It's scary to tell a story about someone who's not alive anymore and who already felt so invaded. She said, I never wanted to feel like we were invading anything, just that we were kind of adding to the multiplicity of a beautiful thing. Spencer is slated to hit theaters November 5th. Another movie I might recommend you just wait for on Redbox, Tim. Doesn't seem like the kind of spectacular that you need to go see in the theaters, unless they become an advertiser on the show, and then by all means, go see them in the cinema.
You know, that's gotcha. One of those ones that...
But there's a lot of people that love the Royals and that family, although I have to laugh.
Yeah.
You brought up Walking Dead. How many of the characters based out of Washington, Virginia, and Georgia are played by English actors?
True. Very true.
And then we've got Johnny Depp playing, you know, an English pirate. We've got Kristen Stewart playing an English, princess. We've got Renee Zellweger playing a beloved English character. It's just funny to me that, like, England, you know, we do these movies about England and we hire American actors to affect this personality and accents. And need I remind you of Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins?
That was not perfect, though.
Not beloved by most Englanders, though, Tim.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny that we get all these English actors to play American characters and then American characters to play English characters. It's very strange.
You know, and if I could for just a tiny second, my only issue with Kristen Stewart is this, and it's that, you know, I think a lot of people gave her a pass for the Twilight movies. She got better as they got deeper into them, but there wasn't a lot of stellar acting there. I mean, you know, not stuff that...
How dare you?
There wasn't...
Bella's eye flutters and stuttering as she is trying to understand walking that line between loving the forbidden vampire hundreds of years old and she's only 16.
Yeah.
How dare you say she's not much of an actress, Tim?
Well, I've seen better acting and tough acting than acting. Wow.
Hey, Kristen Stewart, if you're listening, you can call Tim and complain.
No. She could send me an email like everybody else. Nothing special about her. But the deal is here is that she just, as her career continues to go along, it just seems like she's coasting. Like she's there's not a role out there that she just wants to reach out, grab it by the throat and wrestle it to the ground and dominate it. I mean, you know, maybe this is that role. Maybe this is the one that turns everything around. But like you pointed out, Charlie's Angels. That's the two words. But that
for her Charlie's Angels movie, she did do the movie Runaways, which was the story of Joan Jett and coming up through that. And she was phenomenal as Joan Jett. I will give her that. She really did a great job in that movie. So
she hit one out of the park. I mean,
Twilight was an insanely popular movie series.
But it was popular amongst one demographic.
That's not true. There are many demographics that love that movie series. I might be one of them that enjoyed it, Tim. I'm just throwing it out there. We also got a chance to interview some of the cast from the first Twilight movie. We did it on Darkness Radio many years ago. Taylor Lautner, probably the most famous of the three at the time, was on the show with us. But I thought it was a fun series of movies for what it was. It'll be interesting. I think she's rewriting the book series now from the perspective of Edward's character. Because obviously this series was told through the eyes and lens of the human, Bella. She's redoing it, which to me means she's having trouble selling other books.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. It might be an interesting aspect. Because again, how do you reboot something then have the person who created it reboot it themselves? That's intelligent. At least then you're going to get good source material.
I guess.
Yeah. I'm still kind of freaked out by the fact that Edward's probably 100 years old and he's, into a 16-year-old girl. But, I guess life is that way when it comes to the supernatural.
And yet nobody went screaming for the hills during that whole deal, did they?
Oh, they did. There were people that were offended and affected by it, but it just wasn't as loud as it would be today.
Yeah.
And it's a sci-fi movie, so I think they give it some leeway.
Mm-hmm.
A ghost hunter claims he has evidence of paranormal activity at a Chester pub that not even skeptics can debunk. That's a pretty hefty statement, Tim. A historic pub in Chester is set to feature on a TV show, Paranormal Captured, on film this weekend. Ye Olde Kingshead is located in Lower Bridge Street and previously featured on Most Haunted back in 2014. Sky's Paranormal Captured co-host Daniel Moss has investigated the building many times and feels he has captured evidence that not even skeptics can debunk. He said, it is a fascinating building and it dates back to 1662. There's a particular area of the pub that used to be a brothel during the 17th century. The paranormal activity in this area is quite funny and is believed that the spirits of brothel workers are still present. The owner has also captured female voices in the area. I have a long-running relationship with Ye Olde Kingshead and I've investigated it many times and I've captured some incredible evidence there in the past that not even skeptics can debunk. When the pub appeared on Most Haunted, odd knocking noises. So there were knockers in the old brothel there, Tim.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, true. Old knocking noises were heard throughout filming. And in the first episode of the second series, Daniel Moss encountered a scary experience in the pub. There's a lot of history to the building and most of it can be seen online, including a fully armored Civil War figure, he said. There was also a sword uncovered in the building under the floorboards during the 1930s that dates back to the 1700s. Anybody who goes into that pub can now see that sword proudly displayed. It was believed that it was used during a duel and that there was a murder committed with the sword. It was buried along with a pair of slippers. This was a superstitious thing to do in an old tradition to ward off any evil spirits. The sword could be a source of the paranormal activity that still occurs. During the episode, I braved a night at the pub all by myself, and it was terrifying. It was absolutely freezing in room 6, which is the most active in terms of activity. I heard footsteps, and there was no one else in the building at all. Very creepy. The historic pub will feature on the show on September 12th on Sky Pick at 10 p.m. So that's for the English viewers. But I guess there's a couple clips on this story, so you can go check it out at darknessradio.com. Click the news tab. You'll find that story and much, much more. What is this? Let me see. Here we go, Tim. Paul O'Grady. Boy, are you familiar with Paul O'Grady?
Yeah, he's that guy who does the thing with the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the entertainer that appeared on Yvette Fielding's Paranormal Activity podcast.
Yeah, that's what I said.
He claims he can smell ghostly perfume in his home.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Well, that makes sense. See what perfume scents.
Yeah.
Clever. #dad joke. Comedian and presenter Paul O'Grady has claimed that his home is haunted by a ghost he can smell. The entertainer, 66, said he had previously noticed a perfume called Joy by French fashion designer Jean Patou in the air. Appearing in the Paranormal Activity podcast hosted by his friend, actress and presenter Yvette Fielding, he recalled experiencing the scent for the first time. I wonder if he had it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or maybe even a sixth scent that he picked up. Sixth sense. See, Tim, it's perfume. It's another smell joke. He added, this is weird, but I went to lunch 2 years ago and the girl who was sitting next to me was a friend of one of the relations of the lady who lived in this house. And she had a message for me. The girl, she said, ask Paul, does he smell perfume? And I went, what? I said, yes, I can. And she said, it's by Jean Patou or somebody. I went and got a bottle off eBay, one of the old-fashioned ones, to see if it smelled the same, and it's called Joy. That's it. That's the perfume. O'Grady also expressed his wish to come back as a poltergeist following his death. He said, if there is an afterlife, I'm coming back as a poltergeist. I can't wait. You'll be in your kitchen, and a plate will go flying, and you'll know it's me, Paul O'Grady. Former Blue Peter presenter Fielding replied, we could be bad together. We could be really bad together, couldn't we? I think there's a lot of people that would say you already are, Yvette, but I could be wrong.
Wow.
We could go to the Houses of Parliament. Paul said, oh, we could do all sorts. I'd pee in the members' drinking tank and all manner of stuff. I'd do terrible things. It would be such a hoot. Do you think that would be an EVP? Woo, I'm rolling today, Tim. And anyway, they'd get an exorcist in, and that would be the end of us. Woof, puff of smoke, down to hell for bad behavior. Paul O'Grady's episode of Paranormal Activity with Yvette Fielding is available Thursday.
Can't wait.
Yeah, or you could just read, you know, hear the news story I just told you and save you some time.
I think I'll do that.
Yeah. Hey, Tim.
Yeah.
The historic Malaga Inn in Alabama is notoriously haunted, and they're daring you to spend the night. Mm. So if you're a fan of Paranormal Activity, you're in luck because Alabama is home to a variety of places that are believed to be quite haunted. Among these places are some of America's most haunted hotels. One hotel in particular where you'll likely experience paranormal activity is the historic Malaga Inn, which you can learn about in the following story, Tim. And again, this story and all the cool pictures and videos and things that are associated with it and the other stories are up at darknessradio.com under the news tab. The historic Malaga Inn, which began as a pair of twin townhomes that were built for two sisters in 1862, became a hotel in the 1960s after the townhouses were connected. Located in downtown Mobile, Alabama, the Malaga Inn is also considered one of Alabama's most haunted hotels. A variety of rooms are offered at the Malaga Inn that guarantee an unforgettable stay. Each one has been beautifully decorated and is said to be quite comfortable. And if that's not enough, these rooms are surrounding a beautiful courtyard, which is used for celebrating Mardi Gras, Tim. Mardi Gras. During their stay at the historic Malaga Inn, many guests have reported lots of paranormal activity. For example, Tim, celebrating Mardi Gras in Mobile, Alabama, when it's known to be celebrated more in downtown New Orleans. That's how paranormal this place is, Tim. I guess they say the view from there is amazing of Mardi Gras taking place in New Orleans. I could be wrong. I don't know.
I'm frightened already.
During their stay, well, listen, if paranormal perfume didn't do it for you, Tim, this might do it. During their stay at the historic Malaga Inn, many guests have reported lots of paranormal activity. For example, Tim, several of them have witnessed lights flickering on and off, Tim. That's right, not just flickering on, but flickering on and off during odd hours of the night. In addition to seeing furniture moving about on its own and chandeliers swinging back and forth. The most haunting experience guests have reported, which also makes this hotel one of the most haunted around, is witnessing the spirit of a woman in white pacing back and forth on the veranda of room 007, Tim. Many people believe the spirit belongs to one of the sisters. The next time you're planning to visit the city of Mobile, consider booking a stay at the historic Malaga Inn. You may have a haunting experience. Or you may not. Way to define it there. Either way, your stay is sure to be unforgettable. For more information about Alabama's historic Malaga Inn, including on how to book an overnight stay, you can view the hotel's website and information in this article, which you will conveniently again find at darknessradio.com under the news segment. All right, Tim, our final two stories are here.
All right.
Are you ready for this?
Ready.
Spooked prisoners reckon they saw a UFO above their jail, and then they broke out in a mysterious red rash. One inmate claimed he and other lads came out in a red rash. The saucer skeptic was left speechless by the incident that happened earlier this year. In a letter to Prison Magazine, Tim, Inside Times, he said, "I do not believe in the supernatural or aliens from Mars, but what we recently saw here in the prison was really very strange, and it still leaves me speechless. My landing was out on an exercise, in all doing our own thing. Some were working out and others like me were walking around. You get the picture. I spotted a hawk upon the battlements, just hovering like it had spotted a mouse or something. It was an exercise yard at HMP, the Verne, Dorset, when a very bright light suddenly appeared in the skies." He said the object started to come closer and closer until it was actually hovering over our exercise yard at about 100 feet or so above us. We were, by this time, all, including officers, standing with our hands and heads tilted back and looking up at this strange thing. Then the object started to shrink and collapse in on itself until it dissolved into a cloud of mist. Then it started raining on us, and the next day we all came out in a red rash. The prisoner thinks it may have been a secret military aircraft from a nearby base. I have heard many different explanations from different men. Some say there is a military base on Portland and that this could have been some military black ops project. Others say it was a ball lightning. I don't know what it was, except it was extraordinary. The sighting is the latest of many unexplained UFO encounters. This summer, a student at Devon captured pictures of what he claimed was a UFO that hovered above the sea for 10 seconds before vanishing at speed. The strange object with four bright lights is a triangular-shaped formation that captured lingering in the sky by Matthew Evans, who said he was looking outside the sea facing window of his top floor flat. We also told the story of actress Abby Bella, who claimed she fell for an alien after being abducted by a UFO from her bedroom in London. A report released by the U.S. government found that a total of 143 UFO sightings since 2004 cannot be explained, and 18 reported events were described as being beyond the known technical capabilities of America. And our final story is here, Tim. This is our audio daily double of the week. Demi Lovato is back and is after the truth. After the singer and actor had their own personal UFO experience while in Joshua Tree, California, Lovato can't help but wonder if aliens have visited Earth. That's what they, along with their best friend Matthew and sister Dallas, seek to find out in the four-part docuseries Unidentified with Demi Lovato, which they've just released the trailer, and we have that audio from right now.
I had this crazy experience that happened to me in Joshua Tree. It was this bright light, kind of moved in like these weird ways that a plane wouldn't move. My goal is to find out what really happened. I'm Demi Lovato, singer, activist, and UFO experiencer. I'm hitting the road with my best friend Matthew and my sister Dallas.
Say hi to Night Vision.
Hi, Night Vision.
To investigate the unexplained and the unidentified.
Look, let's do a skywatch.
What is a skywatch?
Look up. That's a skywatch.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
I'm excited. Do you feel like you're going to be able to do this?
I don't know.
What is that? Oh, my goodness.
Wait, this is so crazy.
Extraterrestrials aren't traveling light years to visit us. What if they're already here waiting for us to reach out?
Can you at least say hello to Demi?
Wow, I'm so excited.
In October of 2020, Lovato posted on Instagram that they had witnessed the most incredibly profound sighting, both in the sky as well as feet away from them. And in a new unidentified trailer, they expand on that experience. I had this crazy experience that happened to me in Joshua Tree. It was this bright light that kind of moved in these weird ways that a plane wouldn't, Lovato says. My goal is to find out what really happened. The show looks like it's going to be filled with some great UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena footage, plus some fun times with Lovato and their friends. Demi is a charismatic star, and even if the show was just 4 hours of them sitting in the dark watching the sky, the writer of this article feels that that would still make it compelling. I don't know that I would feel the same about that, though, Tim. Yeah. Interest, of course, in UFOs and UAPs, as the government calls them, has exploded over the last year. And finally, the report is out. It just goes on to talk more about the report that we've discussed ad nauseum on the show. But if you'd like to see that trailer and find out more about Demi Lovato's new series, Unidentified, it will be a Peacock original series. You can find that and more information at darknessradio.com under the news segment. Tomorrow, we are back with The Curse of Lizzie Borden. We'll take a deep dive into the Lizzie Borden story and examine a different aspect of the story. Not so much a whodunit, but how it was done. And was there supernatural presence behind it? Hopefully, we'll be joined by a Borden family member, Sam Beltrusis. Psychic medium Chris Fleming will definitely be with us. That's tomorrow, right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. I'm Dave, that's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.